Red Coatman, Reel 4.
I then had a mass meeting explaining discipline itself. You see? and that meant, do you believe in what you're doing? In other words, what are you here for? If you really believe in a Spanish Republican government and you want them to win, that's enough in itself for you to discipline yourself. You may not like things that are done. For instance, the military command suddenly issued an order that all soldiers must salute an officer at all times. Well, we had never saluted anybody, and we kind of dodged it, just as we dodged the business of wearing officers' uniforms. We wouldn't have it. Neither would Tito, by the way. He got more bloody uniforms now than anybody in the world, I should think. But then, he was for the same, like Mayo, you see.
When was this order made?
Oh, it was middle of 1937. We were still at Crom at the time. I'd be around about May 37.
Was this when you became officially part of the Spanish Army?
Yes.
Was that when the change?
Yes, all the orders, wages, officers' wages. So we had to decide these things. And finally we decided we'd accept. So I said, look, I'm a sailor. I found it very hard in the Navy to salute an officer I didn't think was the bee's knees, I didn't like, or didn't like me. But that's what it was. Finally I had to do it. But if it embarrasses you, I will salute you first. But you must salute. Because it's part of discipline. It says to itself, do we as a battalion accept an order from the Spanish army which we don't like? Or do we say we do as we bloody well like? Obviously we don't, so we salute. They all agreed. But here and there a bugger wouldn't salute. Young Mac... Oh dear, how do you know? McElroy, who never use a sapping trench between our trenches and the headquarters. It was only the distance of this garden, you know. But he wouldn't get down a bloody hole. He'd run across the top. Because he got a kick out of the bullets going ping, ping, and he was dodging them. There was a fellow always waiting for anybody, you see. Sniper. And he finally got it. Got killed. Died in my arms, and I said, oh, Jock, if only you'd bloody well listen. He just bled to death. He was one that wouldn't salute. I went down to the garage, which was in church in Murata. All been burnt out. And he was doing some, picking up something or other, I don't know what it was. And I went by and he didn't salute. I said, hey, Jock, come here. I'm going to salute you. He was half canned anyway. He'd been down for his whack of vino. Some of those vats were still full and he used to go down and fill them up. Well, allowed, isn't it? But Hooky Walker being easy for easy, he let them get it, so that's how they got their booze. And he was half canned, he wouldn't salute. I said, you know what's going to happen? No, I'm going to salute you if you don't salute back. By now, of course, everybody in the bloody garage would turn out and see what was going to happen. I'm going to thump you. And I warn you, it'll hurt. I was almost pleading, not done. Get stuffed. In the broad Scots it was. So I put one on him, and he went out. And I said, get him up the line as soon as he comes round. So up the line he went. He still was vicious. Next I hear was, McElroy's got a hand grenade in his hand. He's stamping up and down the bloody trench with a pin out, threatening to blow up any officer, and it's the bloody battalion commander, he'll be of a special, you know, oh, Jock. Oh, God, I thought this is it. It's all very well to say that. I'm going up and I'm thinking, in my bloody hell, I can get killed here. You know, this is about drunk. What am I going to do? So there we are. We're facing one another. The lads all back in the trench, piling up to see what goes on, but keeping well enough to get round the bloody corner. This dude's got two hand grenades, one in each hand. I said, look, Jock, first of all, I could have you up for jankers for not saluting. You can't salute with a bloody hand grenade in each hand. And I finally had to thump you. and I'm going to thump you now. I decided it was no go. You could talk all day. I just got to take a bloody chance. I'd said to two of the lads, now when I walk in, you rush, if he drops them, pick them up and throw them over the top. You've got 3 seconds to do it in. But I'll do my stuff. So I said, now you're for it. Throw them away or take the bloody consequences. And I went up. I went to thump him. Hold it. All right. I said, you cheeky bastard. I said, throw him away. I'm not arguing a bloody point. So he threw him over the top. Bang. He said, I want it put on record that the battalion commander is wasting ammunition. Everybody roared a bloody laugh. That was the end of that. But to me, it was for a few minutes life and bloody death. And this happens all the time with commanders in that type of bloody army. Because it'd be a sergeant major that would sort that thing out in the British Army. But that type of thing happened all the time. But the discipline was good. I never told you the incident. Experience. Little incidents in life that suddenly become important, like the one of the old boy's crossfire and clearing the trench. No bravery involved. It's so bloody simple, really, when you started. If you were in the reserve, in a reverse position in a deep trench, and ever so often a little black pill get coming over and 6 blokes died, you'd all get to know it quickly, all piling up to get away from it. So there's nobody going to fight you. The only danger was from people over the other trench. So it was my old boot. And I took over the battalion and found that we lost patrols. But every other night we would lose half a patrol. So I challenged the bloody brigade commander, what the bloody hell are these patrols for? All this malarkey about controls going out at night and finding out secrets. A lot of bloody tripe. Most of them go over the top, get in a hole and sit there, come back in the morning. Never get any information. Want to stop? Oh, he wouldn't have that. Carl, go, the patrols must get the information. So we sat down.
Who was
down.
That?
Oh, very early on. About.
Was that Nathan that... That wanted those night raids.
This would be Gal, the top bloke who refused it. We had a mass meeting. And I said, look, I can only think of one thing. So that we have something to aim at. If it is successful, then every other patrol must do it. There's no good sitting in a hole because you'll have to prove why you didn't get them. Because in this system, they must turn up. Because that's what nature's all about. So we find out where the bog is. There'll be officers' bogs, sergeants' bogs, privates' bogs, all along. I'm saying, we got them. Trenches dug behind here with things around. We got a dozen bloody bogs. So they've got them. So tomorrow night, I will go myself, get a special patrol, and we will find out where the officers' bog is. And that's all we got to do. When we find out, we come back, even if it's only half an hour afterwards. And when we find them, the next patrol's got to go out. We're going to give you, two of you are going to wear a uniform. Because we had their uniforms like they had ours that we'd picked up from prisoners and things. And you're going to the officer's bog and you're going to sit there. You've got to get there when it's dark and wait until a nice, you know, officer of some importance turns up to do his stuff. And then you grab him. What do we do? I mean, supposing he yells out, I said, you must be joking. You get a bloody knife and you grab it in his guts and you grab out of what he's got and say, now look, mate, if you so we don't cut him right off. I said, if you're an officer in the dark with two other blokes around you, you're not going to yell, mate, you're going to quietly go forward. And if you take his bloody trousers off and he walks with nothing on, he's even more embarrassed. He doesn't even want his own people to see him like that, so he'll come over quietly. Well, it worked. It worked. We picked up a bloody colonel one night in lovely silver uniform. Bloody Italian he must have been. What the hell he was doing, I don't know. He brought him up, sent him up to the brigade. Now, this went on for about 3 weeks. And suddenly, Gal sent for us to go to the divisional headquarters. This record of the British never getting anything other than an officer was out of this world. You only got a bloody officer once a year. So I thought, we're not giving our bloody secret away. Okay, so he said, well, how is this done? I said, we've had a lot of training. we've had the Guards Brigade book in, and we find that they do things much differently to anybody else on patrol. And they're much more vicious. And that means they can get far further. And we've set a simple system that every patrol must produce evidence that they've been on patrol. And the only evidence you can give is a human body. So it's got them worked in such a way that it all goes. So he thought, this is bloody wonderful. He said, you'll have to tell Tom Wintergham, who was now commander of a training, officer's training camp, you'll have to give him the signal. So I said to Tom, I'll give you the bloody signal if you dare to tell anybody. And none of these bloody officers coming out here looking for the bog at night. And you give it your bloody self. So Tom kept it to himself. The only bloke we ever told us just about a month before we left for Armour was Tito. Dimitrov. Of course, he then got the medals too. They would have given us medals if we'd taken them, you know, for this. But it was none of these things. I found it out. Who do you think I found it out from? On the only one occasion where the Navy become soldiers is about once every 5 years, where the Guards Brigade come out to Malta and attack some little town in the middle, and the Navy defend it, and we have to get rifles on and go ashore. Well, Louis Mountbatten was a lieutenant commander, and he was in charge of the destroyer flotilla's company, and I was on a destroyer flotilla, and we went ashore, and he was our commander, young, bright fella. And a bit of a lad, everybody liked him. And he said, now look, we've only got to do one thing here. This is a lot of malarkey. He was like us, he didn't like it. We want to get over quick. He said, we've got umpires all over the place. He said, what I want to do, I want six men to go into the town and hang around the public lavatory. There's only one, and that stinks like hell, but it's there. And grab yourself an officer and come back. And it might take you 2 days, but get one. That's all you've got to do. Well, that's what they did. And we got medals. Our little old destroyer company that had actually got a prisoner of above some rank went down in the records of that battle, you see. And I always remembered it. And then I raised it there, and it worked.
But when you did that in Spain, surely the fascists would have noticed after a couple of days that their officers were disappearing when they went out.
But why should they not think that we could be getting them? Why shouldn't officers desert? They had bloody deserters the same as we did. Might have got fed up and gone home. Wouldn't even know. We wouldn't know where a fellow had gone, would we? Wouldn't come into our mind that one of our officers had been taken over the bloody top because we killed out ourselves. They never got in. They never did. Their bloody front was so easy to get through. You could, they all went to sleep. Really, literally went to sleep. The Spaniards have a rigid attitude to life. That is, you sleep at night, never go to war at night, and you sleep halfway during the day, and you never go to war then. And they stick to it. It's become everybody accepts it. And once everybody accepts it, nobody ever thinks of getting up and looking around. It never was a bloody night attack anyway, except some loon letting off a gun and firing everything behind it. Nobody went over the top. So that's how it worked. Anyway, it did work. But we had an absolutely rigid rule when I was commander that none of our men would ever get shot. The worst punishment you could have in our battalion was to be sent home in disgrace if you deserted. Now, we only had three real deserters. That's blokes who came back to England and became anti-brigade, you know, went through the embassy. That's how they got home. All the others were deserters, you know, be away for a fortnight. And I used to, once a month, I used to take three lorries down to Madrid and Barcelona and collect them all in. You know, and go around the brothels and the cafes. They all went to the same places. And just pick them up, and they come back, happy samples. You did the whack up for Jankers next day, do the old trench. The bloody trench is in that open ground, out of this world, all over the bloody place. At least it stopped anybody coming our way without falling down a hole, but it did a lot of good.
Was there a controversy about your position in not shooting deserters?
Oh, yes. It was a political issue. And I said to Harry, it's going to stay that way. Now, if you want a... He was all for it. Harry Potter was all for it, but, of course, the brigade were rigid. The others had been shooting fellas right from the beginning. It was all the Germans especially, automatic. Now, they did shoot two fellas. When I left as battalion commander and went to hospital, right towards the end of the war, Sam Wilde agreed to shoot two British. Of all the people, one of them was Ovenden. Now, Ovenden was one of the six fellas who were at that front when the machine gun company were taken, which means he was there. He was an ex-sergeant in the Guards, I think. And he was good at the front, but it's quite true, he did run away. He ran away when I was there, went to Madrid for a woman. But he didn't get shot. And I only heard of it a long time. I was lying in hospital, and old Sam, the Yankee party bloke, what's his name, Sam Watson, Sam Seaman, something like that, who was the head of the American Communist Party, came in and said, "Fred, sorry to tell you, two of your lads were shot today and court-martialed." And nearly killed me. And he brought at the same time the message that Wally Tatzel had got killed. And we had an inquiry. The Lister division went back over the ground and found the bodies of Wally Tatzel and Merriman, the American top bloke, who was a major in the brigade staff. Wasn't an accident, these two fellas got killed. Nothing to do with our blokes. It's just they had a bloody Spanish officer with them. They didn't know who the hell he was, who said he came from brigade headquarters. How the hell they came to be where they were, in the middle of the battalion. Normally they're at the front and they're marching along the road up the front. They had no bloody scouts out, either right or left, front or rear. Marching along the road on the Ebro, came alongside a line of tanks, all parked alongside the road. Went by as if they were shaking hands with bloody mum. And suddenly the bloody tops opened up and they were there. Everybody was in sight, stopped, were taken bloody prisoner. The two ends that had got by or hadn't arrived just ran away. So half the battalion disappeared, and that was half of half, so they only left a quarter anyway. Because the battalion was getting smaller and smaller and it weren't getting any recruits. And Wally Tapsell and Merriman were seen to run with all the others. But they were killed. When they were found, Wally Tapsell had a hole in the back of his head and a big one at the front. This is pretty obvious, the bullet went through the bloody back, and how the hell it would go through the back facing the tank, I don't know. In any case, he wasn't by the tanks when he was shot. Anyway, that's how they found the bodies and they got buried. I'm always convinced that the party, not our party, the British party, wouldn't be that deep in that type of thing, but the Russians were up to all the tricks in hell. There was all kinds of arguments going on when we took our machine gun company up to the brigade headquarters, division headquarters. That was the state of the brigade. It was breaking up. There was no recruits coming. These Germans, Italians had got down a few dozens, still calling them battalion. All the others were Spanish. Our own battalion was reaching a bloody low ebb too, although it happened at that stage that we had brought it up to full strength for the Battle of Brunetti. But we lost an awful lot, taking that village of Villeneuve. We got a brand new tank, all on our own. Tell you how luck comes in. I've always been scared stiff of bloody tanks. Never didn't understand them. I thought, oh, bloody things, keep clear of them. Went to get the tower opened up to get the fella up. Once again, never a commander never asks for volunteers, a bit of a bloody nut if he does. Only daft sergeants, majors in the brigade of guards ask for volunteers, nobody else. And usually they order them. Anyway, we get our three blokes from headquarters and we go and open up this bloody place and get these fellas out. The brigade all fire like hell at the tower while we run up toward it. They're all laughing like hell because we're jumping like old women, you know, thinking bullets are coming and not there. And when we finished, we come out the door and behind the building, there's a big, huge, never seen one like a lovely big green tank. With a bloke bending down, talking through the tower. Now, we only had two left now, because one got killed on the way. Andrew Duval, French lad, who was one of my interpreters, because by now, Bill Ruskin had gone to the, what do you call it, headquarters, right up top of Madrid, in the Army Corps headquarters. And I said to our blue, "Look, give me a bloody hand grenade," because we had two hand grenades. One we'd used to set light to the bloody stuff. We didn't have any matches, by the way, but it went all right. We got them out. And I nipped round the back, hopped on the back of this. Got me over there. He didn't even know. He was still reacting away to a German, nattering away to this crew inside. I got me pin out, pulled me a little pellet between his legs, counted one, two, three, let go, dot. Never seen so much bloody flesh come through the top of the bloody tower in my life. But nothing else got knocked around. The others inside were killed. So we had a brand new tank. And that night, when we went in, the last thing I did before I went to bed was say to Joe Hinks, look, get somebody up here who can drive a bloody tank. This is a prize we're going to bloody well get. Well, when we got the next one, the bloody tank had disappeared. But we hadn't got it. That bloody Tito had pinched it. And he was parading the bloody thing in front of the bloody brigade headquarters, you know, what we are. Oh, you wicked bastard. I said, you know quite well we've got a bloody tank. He said, what does it matter? We all get medals sometime. But I did collect a tank. And it seemed so silly. Well, I was scared all the bloody time. I looked, turned around, I thought, well, no, they'll just start the engine and run away with me on it. Every all kinds of dreams get in your mind, you know, when you're doing things which people say are brave, but which in fact you're more scared than anybody ever wrote thing.
You mentioned that Ovenden was shot for desertion, but according to Hugh Thomas, Ovenden was killed at Brunetti.
Well, then it's a name like Ovenden. Two were shot. Thomas mentions the two, doesn't he?
Well, I'll have to
check. I think
you'll
find who Thomas mentions too. Or that fella there does. His mum sent it back. There's a book on the Spanish Civil War. After all, hardly any of the fellas in the early days had been wounded less than five times. After all, you keep going in hospital, coming back, as an individual begin to think, well, what the hell? I'm going to die here, all right, because there's no hope for anything else, is there? Some couldn't care. Some just got, you know, really ill. But all of them had doubts in whether, you know, it was fair. And I knew that because I had doubts. See, when I came out of that meeting, Central Committee, when they brought everybody back and they decided only Wally Tapsell and myself would go back. The first thing that came into my mind, yes, old Fred, he's been wounded six times. They've got to want to get rid of him. He's a bloody nuisance. Seeing Wally Tapsell, who had organised a YCL against the Central Committee at a national conference and won, beat the Central Committee. That isn't often done in the Communist Party. I thought, well, that's enough to get his head chopped off. So that's why we're going back. It wasn't that really. But
why were those two particular men singled out to be shot?
Well, the pressure had got so... You see, you're getting towards the end of the war. And the natural thing for volunteers is to say, well, I've done my bit, it's going to go, United Nations, we'll go. You don't necessarily discipline people in a voluntary army of that type as you do in an ordinary army. They still think they're volunteers. And their volunteers mean what it says. I volunteer to come out, I volunteer to go back. And some bloody sound common sense if you've been wounded enough times. So that I had a great deal of sympathy with that. And so did Harry Pollitt. The British Communist Party took no part in these huge fiddles. This was the Russians. I doubt whether any of the European Communist Party did. Of having people bumped off and things like that, you know, and they're ordering, you must introduce discipline and the only answer is to shoot people if they desert. Make an example, you see. Well, I had said no, and I'd won, and Harry had said no, so of course our people were very anxious to keep that principle. But all the others had already gone over it, even the Yanks and the Canadians, Mackenzie Papineau. They had shot people for desertion. And the Germans had been doing it for them. And the Italians, they're all ex-communists, you see, of some standing. All their countries were under fascism. So they had a ruthlessness when they arrived, which wasn't in the British, American and Canadian battalion. And because these battalions, certainly the British, no question of it, was the finest battalion in the brigade. It really was, you see. You can't judge other than what they did. In every action, they were miles ahead of everybody else. And in every action, they were the last to be withdrawn. the commanders don't use a battalion like that unless it's a good one. And that's what you pay for. If you're so good, then you've got to keep on being good. But it gradually broke down because the recruits stopped. There came a time when the British Communist Party said enough and stopped recruiting. And that would be towards the end of August or September, 37 or 38, 37. And from then onwards, the battalion got smaller and smaller until what they called a battalion was no more than a company. All the others were Spaniards. It was a full battalion, but they had three Spanish companies and one British. Called it the British Battalion. And that's why they had so many commanders. There's at least Bill Alexander, young O'Hara, an Irish lad. He became battalion commander of British Army only for a fortnight. He was killed. Bill Alexander, Sam Wilde finally took over. And he was the one I wanted to take over, because he was a sailor anyway, and that was the type of commander you needed. You needed a down-to-earth, no old buck kind of business, not too formal, to keep lads together. You had to compromise on discipline. And as I told you before, my discipline was Navy discipline. Jankers at 9 o'clock and you got what was coming. And a lad, that was fair enough, we'd do that. Never introduce a punishment which produced somebody else to carry it out. See, if you gave punishment, say imprisonment, once you've done that, you've got no control, you've got no prison. How can you put a lad in prison? So you had to introduce things. And the one thing I held over everybody's head was, look, the worst thing can happen to anybody is to be sent home in disgrace. The Daily Worker would print, see, this lad would run away. And we never got that far. Never sent anybody home. But they finally had to give way. They shot two blokes. Sam, by the way, took charge of the bloody shooting party.